Let me start over. It's 6:03. We'll just call it the order again. No public comment, no minutes to approve. So, as I was saying, the first agenda item is to recap the presentation to select board again, only if we want. But the heart of tonight's agenda is to shift gears away from highway vehicles over to town buildings, which hopefully will be a lot less work. Any comments on the agenda and anything we should add, anything we should, anything at all? Okay. All right. Well, how do you all feel about recapping? I mean, I'm kind of in the same feeling as what Neil said about the select board presentation, but I'm happy to spend time talking about it if you guys want to. I don't think we need to, but I'm happy to.
So, Scott, I guess I don't want to use a lot of our time here, but I again, this is new for me, right? I'm the new guy. And so I guess I wasn't sure when coming away from that, the presentation, which, I felt like it was well received, and we got, some kind words about our, a thanks, which was nice. But I didn't know how to interpret the reactions or now what. And so
Right.
now that we've delivered that information to them, and I realize we have more to deliver to them, it was just very unclear to me sort of what's next.
Yeah, and I think it is unclear. I think Neil's point was, well, actually, maybe I should just let you state what your point was, Neil, rather than me telling.
Sure. Absolutely. I think we've done our job very well with the thing. We've given the select board the tools they need to work on the budget. That's their objective now is to set up the FY22 budget. And we've given them all of the tools they need. If they need more variations or different scenarios, they can either do it themselves with the spreadsheet or ask the committee to do it for them.
Yeah.
I think our job is done there.
I didn't come away with a clear anything clear that said, hey, go run a different scenario, for instance. I also wasn't clear. I don't think there's any errors in the spreadsheet, but I also wasn't clear whether you all maybe came away from the meeting thinking, gee, maybe we should look at the spreadsheet again and make sure everything's correct. But as far as I know, the spreadsheet's good to go.
I would agree with Neil. We've given them the goods. Let them figure it out. I made the comment that the 1.5% finance rate was not realistic. It was 2.9% from 9.5 from John Deere, and that's what we put in. And that wasn't really disclosed, but that was disclosed at the meeting. And I'm not really happy with a couple of things, but I can live with it. They understand it. That last column that Neil pointed out, and the which we you didn't go along with it at the last meeting, which did the average, you had the total out at the end, and it came up with the total, including the tailings, I guess, if you want to call that. And then you divided it out by about three columns before that. So, the spreadsheet was John Peters mentioned that he thought it was overweighted, and we really preferred the loan scenario because there was a lot more benefits there. And Scott, you pointed out that that was not the case. So I'm not so sure that if I was doing it again, that I would have made this a little bit more realistic with today's rates, and I would have been a little bit more forthcoming with the all of the depreciation schedules that we used for the trucks to spell that out. And but you know, it is what it is. And I at this point, I think they've got enough. I think for the most part, they'll see through whatever we try to mislead or cover up or not come up with perhaps a more transparent thing. So it's not worth our time tonight to go over it, frankly, because we'll just argue about it probably. And they've already got it. So then we're going to go back and say, well, we had it at 1.5 and we really should have had it at 2.95. And we're sorry about that, but they can double whatever the interest it was at 1.5 and figure out what it is. So they can double that figure, and they can do that in their head. So I don't need to go over it anymore. I think another time, I think I would prefer doing it more transparent, but that's just my opinion.
Well, I'll bite. I guess I just, since this is a formally recorded meeting of the town, I would just say I take exception to the words, you know, cover up and misleading, because I don't believe that to be the case at all. So,
well, then you explain.
I'm not looking to debate it, John. I understand your position and I respect it. I just, you know, respectfully disagree.
Well, let me ask you a question then, John. Where do you come up with a 1.5% finance rate? Where you've come up with the truck cost, we've researched depreciation schedules and inflation rates. Where do you come up with 1.5? How can you justify that? You can't.
John, the 1.5 has been in that spreadsheet since day one of our discussions. And if you thought it was wrong, we should have discussed it about 6 weeks ago. I don't care. It could have been 1%, 2%, 3%, but I didn't choose that number, nor did any of us. It's been in there since day one.
Now, let me tell you something, John. I'm sorry to disagree with you, but Neil Lampson got that quote from John Deere at 2.95. He ran the numbers. He said, you can go back and check the recording. He said, I put the number in at 3.13 or 3.xx. in order to make it come out right. And those were Neil's figures that he ran. And how it got changed, I don't know. But when I went through and checked it, and I said, this is a low number for the amount that's being charged to finance. And when I finally looked at it and figured out it was 1.5%, I went, I just assumed it's been 3% all along. And that's not how it got changed, I don't know. But it got changed somewhere because Neil had 3% on day one. Can you vouch for that, Neil?
My original numbers, the payment calculator that I use on the spreadsheet formula, I played with it until I came up with the $41,000 a year, I guess, it whatever the number was for that, for the grader. So, I mean, yeah, it came out to be like three something. And right. But it's not worth discussing anymore as far as I'm concerned.
No, it's not.
I'm done with that project. Let's move on to the buildings.
I just want to make one statement though. I think none of us know what the ultimate, if the town were to pursue some financing arrangement with a dealer, none of us actually know what interest rate we would ultimately get. And I say that because there would be some negotiation going on, and there is room to expect that whatever the rate was in the Nortrax quote, that it could be negotiated down. I don't think 2.9, it was 2.9 something. I certainly wouldn't, speaking as a select board member, I wouldn't accept that rate at face value. I would want to negotiate with the dealer and find out what the best rate they could offer. The other thing to bear in mind too is that, as you all know, there are other loan mechanisms, financing mechanisms out there. One of them is the municipal equipment loan program through the state. That is 2% interest rate. So that's money that's potentially available right there. That's a five-year term, but it is 2%. The other thing is, I mentioned to you all over email, there is a USDA program that is both grant funding and or a loan. And I'm trying to find out information on that, but who knows what the interest rate on that USDA program is. It too could come in quite low for an interest rate. It might come in at 2%. So I agree there's no point in squabbling over the interest rate. I don't think there was any, I don't think anybody intended to pull the wool over anybody's eyes with a 1.5%. I don't think there was any, none of us had any negative intent. And I don't really understand why we're making such a big deal about this interest rate when none of us know how it would ultimately shake out if we pursued some sort of financing arrangement. So, okay. You all want to pivot over to buildings? Ready to do that? All right. Well, hopefully this will be much lighter lift. I'm going to share my screen here. So I don't think, let's see, last year, so I think we did do an updated spreadsheet. Yep, we did. So we did an updated spreadsheet last year. You see the date up here, 12/27/2019. And what we attempted to do last year was to cross off the projects that had been completed. We wanted to retain. So what you're seeing here is the original spreadsheet we did back in 2016 with some additions, some edits, and crossing off projects that have actually gotten done. I think there might have been, I can't remember if there was, there was one version, there were some, maybe some math errors. So I'm not sure if that's still the case in this spreadsheet. But anyway, long story short is, I think our goal should be, at a minimum, to update this sheet again and cross off any others that have gotten done since then. I think so, there's a few. And then make some whatever necessary additions. So, you know, we could just start with town hall. I think, I don't know, maybe we'll just open it up here, but I don't think there's any, the latest stuff by my recollection, that may not be on here is, we recently talked about doing something with the front ramp. I don't know if that's happened or not, but that wheelchair ramp going up to the front door needs replacement, I think.
Hey Scott, can I just make a quick comment for John and Neil's benefit?
Yeah,
because I think they may be seeing the spreadsheet for the first time.
Okay, yeah, please.
Looking at it in detail for the first time. So we have these three categories, you know, new capital, major maintenance, capital renewal, and non-capital routine. So we're really just looking at capital expenditures, but in looking at these buildings, we determined that some of them require more sort of routine maintenance, you know, like keeping them painted and stuff like that. And so we put that third column in there just to make the select board aware that they need to probably budget that in their normal expense category. And that those are things they should be doing in an effort to prevent those things from, you know, becoming deferred maintenance or whatever, and potentially a larger capital project down the road because of letting things fall apart or deteriorate or whatever. So that's why we have that in there. But it's really those first two, and the difference between them is pretty insignificant in a lot of ways. It's just that the major maintenance capital renewal is a little more predictable. So those are things like, you know, boilers and things like that, that, you know, every 15, 20 years, you're going to have to get a new one. So that's more cyclical, where the new capital expenditures are things that are sort of brand new that don't exist. Like roof insulation, you know, a thermal envelope, in the town hall, that's a new thing. It's not maintaining. I mean, there was no thermal envelope really, you know, so that's sort of new capital. So that's how those three columns shake out. It's just the center one is more cyclical. And the end one is really on there more for just the select board's benefit of knowing that they need to keep up with some of that stuff. Does that all make sense?
That's helpful, Hunter. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Hunter.
Yep.
The only thing that's on here in the town hall, Mr. Wright was going to paint that this year, but his help crapped out on him, and he's going to try to get to it next spring. He promised. I saw him at the town garage when he was finishing painting down there, and he said he would get to it in the spring. So that'll be done in fiscal year 21.
Is that not on here, or is it on? Are you talking about the rear?
It's on there right now for $6,000 to paint the rear of the town hall exterior.
Okay, and you're saying not until sometime next year.
It'll be in the spring, so that'll be on FY. That won't be on FY22 budget.
Okay, so it's coming out of this year's budget.
Right.
Yeah, we still should update the spreadsheet. Because we'll also, when we get to it, we're going to need to look at what the current balance is in the town building reserve.
Did any of these other things get finished, like the that rear porch and steps? Was that dealt with?
No, not to my knowledge.
Oh,
I closed the town hall up with Noel Buchanan, and it's it may not be brand new, but it's sturdy and it's safe at this point. Somebody's worked on it, and I don't know who.
Okay. But we haven't done any of the lighting or the porch, the front porch, or the handicap ramp or anything like that.
Right.
That's correct.
Okay.
Is the ramp actually on this list, or is that something new?
No, I think that's new. Well,
there is a ramp, right?
There's
a ramp that comes up the left side, but it's not very compliant and doesn't work very well. We had looked at some of our options for creating a newer and better ramp.
So does that need to be scoped out then?
Yeah, I guess, you know, did I look at that with you, John Moore? We talked about maybe bringing it in when you're facing the town hall on the right side of the porch, where we could maybe build it up with, you know, natural grade rather than build something.
What the feasibility study that was done by whoever the engineering firm was looked at that, and they thought that if you tore out the lilac bush that's on the north side, on the right side as you face it, and you made sort of a circular ramp down, that it would kind of be a circular ramp that would gain enough altitude over the distance to be accessible. And then you'd have to change the door so that it swings the other way, because right now it swings out, so it will block them. My suggestion would be that for the little time that the town hall is being used, that they would be better off short term to buy an aluminum 10-foot ramp and store it over there in the horse sheds. And town hall is only used about 3 times a year for any events, and with COVID, it won't be used this town meeting apparently, and it wasn't used for the 2 suppers, and use that temporarily. But I think in order to budget anything, we're going to have to get an engineer or somebody to try to look at the cost and estimate the cost to move the door. The door has already been changed once to swing from in to out. Now we got to change it again if you do that. And so you can buy those ramps. Probably it would cost $300 or $400 for a 10-foot ramp that would just go on the porch on the south side and extend out to give it a sufficient grade. That would be the easiest way to fix it, I would think, for now. But
yeah, I think you're right, John. That is an option. I know we've done that at KUA with some of our buildings, get those aluminum ramps, and they that's definitely an option worth considering. And yeah, I think the ramp, putting a ramp on that north side, I was thinking like you'd do it with natural grade rather than build some, you know, wood ramp or something like that. But changing that door, the tricky part with that is going to be changing, probably not hard to rehinge that door, but changing the hardware is going to be the tricky part. So that could get expensive. So I think you're right. Like a temporary ramp would be a pretty cost-effective solution for that.
I had a handicapped person stay at my house, and I called the Barnard Inn for dinner, and I didn't think there was any handicap access. We get there, and they had a ramp that they rolled out just like that. So,
yep. You know,
anyway.
Yep. So maybe we want to just leave. We could just leave that number in there as a placeholder, and until we scope it out further. But you know, if we're worried about accessibility, I think recommending to buy one of those aluminum ramps would not be a bad idea.
I think the other problem you run into, Bobby Harrington just spent about $100,000. Actually, it was donated to the church. And you're going to end up changing the bathrooms around because those doors aren't handicapped. So there's a lot of issues, and a second exit that's handicapped. So we start addressing the handicapped part of it in a more formal way. It could become quite a project.
Yeah, and that goes back to that whole question of like what's the long-term use of that town hall? And, because you're right, that's a huge investment, and there's no point in making that kind of investment until we know what the future of the building is, right? And what it's going to be used for, because using it once a year for town meetings doesn't make sense.
Yep. So the select board did make a decision. The issue is not whether a decision has been made. It's really the a question of when. I mean, maybe never, but the board did vote. I'm trying to come up, trying to find the link. But the board voted on one of the options that Holden Engineering presented, and the option that the board voted on and approved. Hang on a second, I'm trying to find it. It was option E. Um, no, that can't be it. Maybe it was C. Or no, had to have been B. Sorry, I'm looking at the, I'm gonna share my screen with a different document. So you should see it now. I think this is, I believe this is the, can't remember if it was the one with the paving or the one that just this does this limited crosswalk gravel area for parking. So actually, let me back up and show you what I'm talking about. This is the website, and these are the options. That were considered, and there were five options: A, B, C, D, and E. And I can't remember which one it was. I'll have to go back into the select board's notes. I actually want to say it's this one. Option C. I don't know if you can see my screen still.
Wow.
I thought the only one they voted on, Scott, was to put some signs up and a crosswalk, and that they've got the signs up now. And I thought that was the only thing that they decided they would do right now.
Yeah, hang on, John. Let me search my it all seems so long ago now. Hang on, bear with me for just a moment. Why don't you guys talk for a minute, and I'm going to try and find our minutes.
I think one other thing we should probably think about, need some discussion, is that I think the old clerk's office where the Historical Society is using now is in pretty good shape, except it still needs some site work. There's some drainage issues that are still a problem, and I think a little bit of paint on that building. But the town garage is the one that I think we need to talk a little bit about how far we want to go with that as well.
Let me get back on the old town clerks for a minute. The select board gave authorization for John Symes to put in new window cells or fix them or paint them and put on new shutters. He did not get to it. And I guess there's two options. We'll find somebody else to do it next spring or get John to do it, but that has to be done. The one part though, Hunter, you're right about, is that we did not address that northeast corner that's sagging in the drainage issues there. So that has to be dealt with. Jim Havel had agreed to do it at no charge when he was feeling better in life, but I don't think Jim is able to do it now. So I'll get up there next spring and try to figure out what we need to do with that. But the only thing would be that plus the painting. The select board did authorize that this last early fall, but John Symes never got to it.
Yeah, I think the drainage was just, I think you need to create a swale around the back there because right now that it's just all draining right into the back corner of the building. And so we just need to move that water out and around the building with just a swale, nothing that elaborate, but
or maybe even some sort of a French drain, because there's a spring back there, a well it's actually the well is up in the woods in back of the brick building, but there's a manhole where the well comes in there and feeds the town hall and the town clerk's office, and there's a pressure tank there. And so that's about 4 to 5 feet higher or 6 feet higher than the building floor of the footprint. So what happens is that snow drifts in there in the winter and then drains down through. So yeah, well, I agree with you, Hunter. We need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's causing structural damage on the back of the building there. I mean, it's just not good. It's the deterioration on that's going to accelerate. Yep. So for that one, it's just the site drainage and in the window repair and painting.
Yep.
It's got a new roof. Everything else is good.
Yep.
All right. And the, what about the town offices? There's just some routine maintenance there, right? But nothing, I don't think there's anything.
I went down there last year and put in some new filters for the, they got a pretty expensive, dehumidifying system in the basement.
Right.
So I think that's working okay. I'm not aware of anything that needs to be done up there.
Did we get that automatic door opener? Was that ever installed for the back entry door?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. I can look into that. I gotta look for one of those anyway, but that back entry door should have one of those. And you can get, you know, wireless ones that aren't that complicated to install.
Well, I found it. It's actually, I have to go back and find the minutes, but it was back in February, back in February 2019, that time frame. That the board approved March 2019, the select board approved alternative E from the Holden engineering study. And believe it or not, alternative E is pretty heavy duty, which is why I don't think anything has happened with it. I mean, from a capital planning standpoint, who knows whether this is ever going to happen, but it, alternative B actually has us literally moving the town hall back from the road and creating these paved parking spaces and the crosswalk. But this was the plan that the select board approved about a year and a half ago or so.
Wow.
I think you might want to check those minutes to be sure about that, Scott. I can't believe that they approved that.
So, that puts a lot of paper. That turns it into a little urban center there.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yep. I'll double check, John, but I did find the email that conveyed it to.
That pretty much ruins the character of the center of Pomfret right there.
That was there was an email that went to the state of Vermont and the engineers.
Maybe they had to do that to get the money. Is that the case? Probably.
I don't know.
They had to finalize something to get the grant money. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Hang on. Curious.
But there was another motion that they made at some point this year about putting up that.
Yeah, here it is. It's in the February 20th minutes from 2019 scoping study. Here, I'll just share my screen. So scoping study option decision, Frank Perrin moved, Emily Group seconded to approve alternative E as presented by scoping setting for town buildings. The board unanimously approved the motion.
Wow.
So that happened in February 2019. And so going back again, this is alternative E right here.
True.
But again, just because the board approved it, who knows whether it's ever going to actually happen.
Wow, I hope not.
That was the outcome of that scoping study.
Yeah.
I mean, seeing how there's been zero movement on doing any of this stuff.
Well, I think in the meantime, John's suggestion of a temporary aluminum ramp makes a lot of sense until we get further down the road.
Right.
Okay. So, I think we've got the brick building, just has the drainage and window repair. The town office is just a handicap door opener at back door. Town hall painting the back end. That's all that's happening there. So what you said, John, needs to happen. It didn't happen this summer. Or
what was that again, Hunter? I didn't hear you.
The town hall, all it really needs is some paint on the back side of it.
Well, what happened is that at the time when they painted the front of the town hall, there was some discussion when Frank Perrin was on the board that maybe they'd rip off the back end of it and fix it up and do something with it. But then the decision kind of evolved. Why fix up the back end until you know what the purpose and use is? Because at the moment, nobody wants to use it for much of anything. So why put that money in and then have it not be what you need in the end? And so it basically hasn't been painted for the last 2 years after they did the front of the front and the sides of the town hall. So there's some, probably the back end of that is going to be on there for probably the next 10 or 15 years, I would guess. And therefore, in order to save the back end from deteriorating anymore, it needs to get painted. And there's a little section where the stage joins the main front of the building over the addition for the kitchen that was added. And that's kind of rotted up there a little bit and shows an awful lot of bare wood. So I think the select board must have voted on it at some point because Emily arranged to have this guy that painted the front to paint the back, and he was going to do it. So, but he didn't get it done this fall because it started raining a lot toward the end of the season there.
And that really is a routine maintenance item, but yep. I think having the 6,000 with the unconfirmed estimate is fine for what we're doing.
Yep.
On this. And exterior lighting, was that was never dealt with, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never happened, nor did the crosswalk. So here's the other thing that I'd have to go and find the minutes for it. But sometime after the board approved alternative E, John Peters, this was probably several months after we approved that alternative E. And we as a board agreed that in the interim, before undertaking alternative B, we would install lights and a crosswalk. So there is, I'd have to go find the minutes, but I'm pretty confident that somewhere in our records, in our select board records, there is a vote to install lights that would help people when they're crossing the road and also the crosswalk.
Are you talking about those lights that flash when you're crossing, like the pedestrian safety ones?
Although that was talked about, like we didn't really, I don't know that we settled on how the crosswalk
would
be handled.
This extra lighting, wasn't it just we needed more light on that front porch? Like you couldn't There wasn't light around the entry.
Yeah, we were talking about having some, I don't know, maybe spotlights or something higher up on the building that when somebody's crossing the road, that there's a decent amount of light for them to see where they're walking.
Yep.
That's my recollection. But we also, again, as I recall, voted to do a crosswalk. So those are probably things that need to get scoped out from a cost standpoint. Because again, and I think we all, as a board, we agreed that those were things we needed to do right away because there were some safety concerns. I think COVID has probably, since things have been so quiet, and maybe it's not so much, since the town hall is not getting used that much, it's not that big of a deal, but I think we will want to take that back up again in the FY22 budget.
So is a crosswalk just painting white stripes on the road, or?
Well, again, I don't think we ever settled on, I think, as I recall the discussion, we wanted, what we wanted to achieve is a crosswalk that would be visible enough to drivers that they would slow down. Because if you just have a painted crosswalk there, people aren't going to slow down.
Yeah, two things. I mean, signage is the best thing. You know, if we had signs alerting people there was a pedestrian crossing ahead. And also, you know, like when I was on the zoning board and we were looking at the Grange Theater down there in South Pomfret, it's good just to get one of those orange pedestrian crossing cones and stick that in the road when there's town meeting or any serious use of that. But I think that you're right. I mean, painting white stripes is not enough to alert a driver that there's a crosswalk. You really need signage.
Right.
They do have the signs up there now, Hunter. I don't know if you've seen them, but they're the green, opaque green. And it basically says, it shows a pedestrian and then it uses the word ahead. And there's one to the north and one to the south.
Okay. I haven't noticed those. That's great.
Yep.
Okay.
They were put up about 2 months ago.
Oh, good. Okay.
And so, I think that's a real plus for Neil that has his farmer's market thing out there, and for Emily on her blueberry picking, as well as for anything that's going on at the town hall or people parking there to go across the street. So irrespective of the crosswalk, I think the signs are a big, big help.
Yeah, probably better. Okay. Good. So, I mean, I think, again, going back to the town garage, that's the only building in my mind that, you know, we could discuss. Jim Potter said too, when he was on the calls earlier, that he thought it could use a break room.
Yeah.
Of some sort. And I don't know whether that's something that can be carved out of the existing footprint, or you need to add onto the building to get something like that. My guess is you have to add onto the building. Just trying to remember, I've only been in that building a couple times, but
the back of that building, there's two issues, and you mentioned one of them, Hunter. The back of that building, if you drove around the building and went into the door that goes into the little office there, a couple of fuel tanks that are inside a shed, and there's a very low a pitched roof that comes down to maybe 2 or 3 feet over the ground, a very low slope. And what Jim thought might work would be to raise raise that roof, put a shallower pitch on it, and have the break room be on the north side, the northeast side of the existing building, over and make that lean-to into it. And the second issue that I think has to maybe look at, and that is some sort of a ventilation system in there for the either when they fire up those trucks, diesel smoke goes into the building, and whether you try to capture it from the exhaust pipe, there are some automatic disconnects that could work. I think the better solution would be to have some sort of an air exchange system in there. I called up ACR, I guess it's ACR, I can't remember.
ARC,
and they said they really have to have an engineer or something come in, and I tried to get a cost for what one of those things would cost, maybe you know, but they thought it would have to be engineered study as to what size unit it would take. So those two issues, I think, break room and the ventilating system.
I know that there was an issue a while back too. I don't know if it was ever dealt with, but I think there's no fire separation between the office space and the garage.
Right.
Like by code, I think there needs to be at least a 1 hour separation between those two spaces. I know we had talked about that and looked at it, but.
Yeah, that it's right here, Hunter, the fire rated separation between office and garage.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yep. And that might just be, you know, sheetrock.
If there's any good news, I guess the part of the good news is there's a door to the north off that office, number one, and number two, all those vehicles that are in there are diesel fuel, not gasoline. So there's two, that's good news, I think.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other combustibles in there besides the.
Yeah, just life safety code says, you know, when you've got two distinct uses like that, one is, you know, garage and the other one's office, it has to be separated.
Yeah.
Let's see, replacing clapboards.
Fire. That was done, right, John?
Yeah, the clapboards have all been replaced and it's painted. It looks really beautiful down there now. You got to go take a look at it.
Yeah.
Oh, great. So we could cross those out.
Yeah, these two are done.
In fact, Jimmy seems quite happy with it. He said, if you want to see a disaster, go over there and take a look at what Sharon has to offer for their road crew. So I've never been in the Sharon garage, but Jimmy seems like he's pretty happy with this one now that it's fixed up.
Oh, good.
Seems to me too, there was, I don't recall exactly what it was, but there's been some other things that got done at the garage that weren't on our list that have come up since we first talked about this. And I want to say it's kind of like off the backside. There was I'm a little bit foggy on it, but something on the backside of the garage by the office, that end of the building, there was something that got done. John, do you happen to recall?
Yeah, there was a tree or something that fell down on the roof or did something in the back. Maybe a little bit of damage on the clapboards, but something was fixed back there as well. That's my own recollection as well.
Yeah.
Well, so if we were to prioritize the stuff that's on that list, what do you guys think would be, you know, one or a couple of the most important things? Maybe that ventilation system, John, sounds like it could be dangerous if they don't have good fresh air in that space.
Right.
I think the break room would be something that I would maybe look at, because that way you could maybe solve the ventilation problem and have the break room be separated with that same kind of a fire retardant wallboard or whatever you call it.
I could run down there and have a look at that. That shed that you were talking about with the low roof.
Yeah, you'd have to raise that roof, and then you could have maybe you would extend the. Yeah, you could do something. There's a lot of, it's sort of dead space back there. Not much is happening. They don't park cars there or anything. It's just sort of you got space to do something back there.
Okay.
This is Neil. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep. Okay. I'm not lighting up there. That's all. If you're going to put a break room on the back with that thing there, you ought to consider just putting a pitched roof, regular roof with trusses or whatever, over the fuel tanks and the break room. And that would maybe make space for your air exchange system, mm-hmm. too. You don't want to extend that flat roof and make it less than it is now. I mean, let's do it right.
So put a pitched
roof on that addition out there so that it stays dry and it's the snow is taken care of, and it's not that single pitch. You need a regular two pitched roof over that.
Okay, so are you basically saying take that thing that's on the back now off and do a regular two pitched roof?
Yep. Exactly right.
Okay.
You're asking for trouble on that flat roof. Doesn't really shed the snow now. If you make it less steep than it is, the boys need something to do once in a while, so they'll have to shovel the roof, right? You know, give me a break.
Huh. Well, I'm happy to go down there and take a look at that.
That's a good point, Neil. Thanks.
Yep.
Oh, sorry to jump around like this. I'm just thinking of things that are in my memory bank. So VLCT, you know, we get a risk assessment from VLCT every year. And the town hall, actually, I think all the buildings were inspected for insurance risk. And we tried to address some of them, but some of them were deferred. And so these just came up in the minutes, but I wonder, does anybody recall whether we got smoke detectors installed in the town hall? That was one of the things that came up on the risk assessment.
I know they did the exit signs. I don't know about the smoke detectors.
What I'll do, because I don't want to take up time doing it here tonight, but since that just occurred to me, I will resurrect the notes from that risk assessment, because what happened was the select board, we had to do this kind of out of capital planning cycle. So some of the things actually got addressed from that risk assessment and some did not. So we'll need to go back and see if any of them, some of them will fall into our non-capital maintenance, our major maintenance, or I don't know if any of them our capital, but I'll try and find that risk assessment that has all the deficiencies, but there is a list of deficiencies for all the town buildings. And when I find that email, I'll send it around to you guys.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be good.
So that's one thing that just occurred to me.
Okay.
So I guess, you know, when I kind of step back from the list, when we first, tackled this back in 2016, our logic was we were doing it kind of mostly building by building, more or less, and then some of the low-hanging fruit we tackled. But we tackled the town hall was like our first priority in 2016, 2017. That's why you can see on our list all those cross marks crossed off for 2017. John Moore, you led most of that work, getting that done, if not all of it. So our first focus was town hall. Then we moved to the town clerk's building. That was our next priority. But it almost seems like now there's no one building that needs like a lot of attention that we should focus on, that we're just sort of, we've got a mishmash of different things that need to get done. Is that the right way of thinking of it?
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
The only caveat would be the garage that Hunter mentioned, but I don't think there's time to do the due diligence to get in estimates and figure out Neil's solution in terms of the two pitched roof. And I don't think we have time to put that in our thing for this year.
Well, maybe the thing for this year is to investigate it or get to work up some numbers for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and for a ventilation system too. I do a lot of work with ARC, so I could try and twist their arm into coming in and having a look at that. So I could work on that and look at the what we could do to maybe get a break room added onto that building. You know, the carriage shed too, we just sort of put that on the back burner, right? We feel like it's stabilized. So that's just sort of.
Yeah, the thing that was brought up on the carriage shed, Emily brought it up at one of the select board meetings, where it was brought up about possibly putting a gutter on, a gutter and downspout. A lot of that water sheds off that roof and runs down the
where
people park their cars. So I called up a couple of gutter people, and one guy said he wouldn't do it because he looked at it and said that the
ripped off
thing isn't really true, and he didn't want to screw up the old building. There was no way to hook the gutter on there properly. So I'm not sure whether it would be better to do some sort of a French drain with some stone there so the water goes down into the stone and then around the building instead of running down onto the Pomfret Road. But I looked into the gutters and didn't get much traction from anybody that wanted to put a gutter on that. And the same thing is true with the water coming off the town offices. There's a tremendous amount of water that sheds from the back and those two roof pitches. So, and I guess, I think Scott had thought maybe that our next priority after the town hall and the brick building would be the value that has from an historical point of view to try to tackle that next. But the roof is shedding the water, even though it has a rusted color. Some people would love to see that nice rusted patina and would pay big money for it to put it on their house on day one. Maybe the need is more for the town garage, I think, in terms of possibly a break room or ventilation at this point.
I would agree with that. I mean, what we talked about back in 2016 was that we were not inclined to, this is my recollection, that we were not inclined to spend town money on the carriage shed, but if we could secure outside money for those improvements, that's what we would do. Yeah. But my recollection is we weren't really going to sink our own money into it.
Yeah, I think you're right. We're going to check into a preservation grant or something like that. But, you know, I think you're right. Thinking about it, I mean, the two buildings that get the most use in town are the town offices and the town garage. And the town offices are in pretty good shape. But, you know, after just going through that whole vehicle exercise, you know, it does justify the idea that, like, that we should make sure that building is in good shape and it's working for the, you know, it's working for the people who are working in there and protecting the expensive equipment that's parked in there. Right. You know, so like a fire alarm system, proper ventilation, you know, making sure the life safety codes are up to date, roof is in good shape, all that stuff. I mean, I think it's important just because we count on that building as one that gets a lot of use and also houses a lot of very expensive equipment.
Yep. Yep.
I don't know if what I just highlighted is visible to you on your screen.
Yep.
This is, I just forwarded you all some email, but this was sort of the last update on the deficiencies. So one of them was just administrative. We had to send them a copy of our contract and the waivers and liabilities and all that. I sent you an email that I followed up on. I think John Syme was the one who ended up doing the hand railing and for the town hall, or he was. John Syme was going to do a quote on the ramp and the railing. I don't know if we said, the board said we were going to look for grants. I had totally forgotten about this one, but a grant for a generator to run the fuel pumps. I think we lost that on our radar, but that was somewhere in there. There was a need for a generator to run the fuel pumps.
Sure.
And then I don't know whatever happened with the smoke detectors for town hall, if that ever got done. So I don't know.
Yes, anything with a generator for the town, for the garage, maybe they could live with one that is not automatic with an automatic transfer switch, but some kind of a small inverter generator that you could plug into a pigtail to run some of the stuff that has to be run there. I'm not sure you need a full blown $18,000, $15,000 rig like you do for the town offices.
I hope not. Yeah. When you get a chance, well, since we're talking about it, let me bring up the document, because somewhere in there it's got to make, because that, I don't think we dreamed that up on our own. Fuel pumps. The fuel delivery hose at the diesel pump was not equipped with a breakaway hose coupling. Recommendation: install a breakaway coupling that will automatically shut off the flow of fuel in the event of a drive off with a nozzle in the fuel tank. What other fuel related? I guess that's it. That was the only, that doesn't sound like a generator though. Huh, I don't know where that came from then. What I just read from the deficiencies list doesn't sound like a generator issue.
I think you'd have to consider what the emergency might be in town. If we had another ice storm of 98, say, and things were disrupted for a week or two and it was down to zero by some quirk of circumstance, I would think that the garage should be operating fully and be heated and be able to fuel the trucks up in addition to that. That speaks to me of a whole house generator kind of a system that kicks on automatically.
Yeah, maybe.
It's important to make sure that our road crew is able to function in a prolonged period of winter, in the winter when the electricity's off.
Right. That might be it. But I don't know that it came from the risk assessment. That's a different source. There's also, I'm just scanning the risk assessment for town garage stuff. There's also one that says the outlets in the automotive area are not GFCI protected. So it said that those outlets need to be GFCI.
Yes.
So that was one thing. Also talks about the wiring in the loader bay shows evidence of wear, damage, was subjected to damage in present state and location of use. Electrical extension reel in this bay is in need of removal or replacement. So you guys can scan it on your own, but there are different, you know, you'll see that the risk report is organized by town building. Again, some of these things got addressed.
I guess the one thing, Neil, that we might want to look at, Emily has a generator that goes behind the tractor that runs off the PTO that'll run her greenhouses and sugar house and her cider press and uses a pigtail to do that. The good thing about that is the generator that she has is probably 40 years old and still works just fine. I've got a generator at my house that requires a lot of maintenance, upkeep, batteries, transfer switches that wear out. And I guess I might think about, you got the tractor down there with the mower on it that has a PTO off the back of it. And I'm not trying to cut corners, but we found out that stuff that gets 15 to 20 years old, it's a hard time finding parts and reliability, so you end up trading it out. And that would probably the same thing would be true with one of the generators like you have up at the town offices, 15 kW. So I guess we could look at them both.
All right, well, I'm keeping a little list here. I can look for the hardware for the automatic opener for the rear entry of the town offices. I could also see how far I get with ARC on looking into a ventilation system for the garage. Yeah. And I could just take a look and see what opportunities would be there to reconfigure things for the break room. It sounds like the electrical stuff down there, if there's bad wiring and the GFI outlets and generator and all that stuff, if it would be worth it, I could get an electrical contractor in there to just try and throw a number at all that stuff as well. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to look at the drainage, the roof drainage on the back of the town offices and the carriage shed and see. I think you're right though, John. It's you're gonna have to deal with it on the ground, I think.
Yeah.
Somehow. So yeah, I'm happy to try and take a look at all that stuff. Maybe this week I have a little time. I could do that.
That's awful nice of you, Hunter.
Yeah, not a problem.
for what it's worth, and maybe John, this is similar to the generator you were describing. We had a Kohler whole house generator put in about 6 years ago with a Vermont generator, who I think are pretty popular in the area. Anyway, it was about less than $7,000, and we've got a 100 amp service with a lot of 220s. So it's pretty beefy. I forget how many amps or whatever, however you measure it, but it's about $400 a year to have them come out and service it. Also, this one runs on propane, by the way, but I think there are options. They service it once a year for about, I think it's a $400 service charge a year, and they change the oil. And you're right, they've replaced the battery once or twice, the battery that starts it up. It starts up automatically once a week and runs for 20 minutes or whatever, just to make sure it's keeping itself alive. And it has kicked in three or four times in those, well, more than three or four times where it was important over those 6 years. So anyway, thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, there's something to be said for reliability, you know, and just knowing that it's going to take care of it, you know, kick on when you need it, not any effort. But it would be worth getting some comparative prices, I think, on that.
I don't know if this is a good time for it, but I thought maybe we should just take a moment and recap where we're at so far. We're going to want to do a fresh version of this spreadsheet. So I wonder, how do you guys want to tackle updating the spreadsheet? Do you want to do it by committee the next time we get together and just kind of go building by building and update it? Or do some of you all want to do your own kind of updates with what you know, or take it on and try and update it? And I'm just trying to figure out some assignments we can take away from this. Since I brought up the whole thing on the risk assessment from VLCT, I can try and figure out where we're at exactly with, I can dissect that list rather than you all having to parse out the whole thing. I can isolate out of that what is applicable to us, because not everything is applicable to us. And then I can also go back through the minutes from the select board and figure out what of those things have already been done. So I can take that as an action item.
Okay. Could you send me a copy of this spreadsheet?
Yes. Yes.
The most current, I probably have, you know, one of the original ones still, but.
Yeah, right. I can't remember if we, no, we only put the PDF version up. So yeah, I'll send it to you. I'll send it around to everybody.
Great. I can take a shot at updating what I know. Maybe if we all did that, we could just combine it all into.
I can call up actually the people that I think did the town offices and did a couple of didn't do mine, but have done several. It's called Brookfield Service, and they do a lot in generators. I'd be happy to get a quote on a 15 kW, which I know will take care of the town offices. I mean, the town garage. And I'll also get a quote on what it would cost to get a PTO-driven one.
So, John, in addition to the cost of the generator, you know, there's labor involved in, like, getting the transfer switch put in and all that stuff, which, you know, can add up too. So,
yeah. Those transfer switches run about $1,500 and
installed.
I don't know. I've got to call into an electrician. I'll ask him on something else, and I'll ask him this.
Yeah, that would be great, because I think an electrical contractor, electrician, like if you have him give you a price, you know, for the whole effort of putting it in there, and if you can break out the cost of the generator, then we at least know what the labor is, so we could look at all our options for generators.
Yeah.
I'm going through this whole thing right now with three dorms looking at large generators there. And there's a whole bunch of options. I mean, so one part of it is getting all the infrastructure put in with the transfer switches and everything.
Yeah.
And you can get a new generator. There are companies out there that rent them that you can maybe pick up a used generator from a rental company. You can also, if you've got everything in there, although it's not as reliable, but you could look at just renting them when you need them too. If you've got it ready to just kind of plug in with transfer switches and stuff, then you could look at a rental option as well. So there's, I think, a lot of different ways you could approach it. But the two key parts of it are, you know, getting the infrastructure in into the building with transfer switches and such, and then you could look at different options for plugging a generator into it.
I think Neil, though, has a good point. You've got three or four people working down there that if something happens, that, you know, that's perhaps more important to have that up and running than, or as important as the two firehouses that have generators.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the thing, like, you know, the electrician or electrical contractor that you're going to talk to could probably give you a price for the whole installation, you know, generator and everything, and just have them break the generator out so you can find a better deal on a generator somewhere. But yeah, and then just, I agree with you, put a system in there like John Rickardson was describing, where you just know it's going to be there when you need it.
Do they have propane there, or what would be the fuel choice?
It would be ideal to have it run off diesel fuel, but most of the generators that you're talking about that I'm familiar with that are in that $8,000 to $10,000 price range, or $7,000, are all propane based units. So I'm not sure. I think a diesel engine would be quite a bit more money probably.
But yeah.
And do we don't have propane at the town garage, I take it?
Not to my knowledge.
Is it oil? Is it oil heat there, John?
Oil, yes.
So that adds a sort of a feasibility constraint maybe on these automatic units, right? I wouldn't want to store gasoline, right?
Well, it'd be diesel.
Yeah.
Well, and those bigger generators have a tank that's integral to the generator.
Some of those diesel ones are pretty big, like the ones that run the hospital over there, that kind of thing. It's a little overkill, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you could put a propane one in, just get a tank, you know.
Yep.
You could just put a
tank. Big tank, if you're going to have if there's a real emergency that's going to last for a long time, I guess, and be cold.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
And of course, then there's the other option of the tractor thing. The only disadvantage of that is it wouldn't go on automatically. But anyway, I'll come up with some prices.
All right, Scott. It sounds like we've all got our
marching orders.
Yeah.
Okay. I just circulated around the last Excel version of this, so you should have it in your inbox. All right. Well, you know, I think actually all things told, we're kind of ahead of schedule from where we typically have been in our capital planning. So I think we should be able to get the town building stuff done with comfortable, you know, comfortable time before the budget's done. This is a little bit easier. I think one of the things we'll want to know, I don't know off the top of my head what the current position is in the town building reserve. We have funded a number of things out of the town building reserve. So one of the conversations we'll want to have coming up is, you know, what ends up being on this spreadsheet that needs to come out of the reserve. And just as I mentioned earlier, we have generally been funding, to my recollection, every one of these categories, even the routine maintenance stuff, has come out of the building reserve, just as a way to have the consistent ins and outs of the building reserve. So having said that, though, it's been kind of piecemeal. So there haven't been like any big hits on the town building reserve. But we'll want to figure out what the current position is and if we want to recommend beefing up the town reserve at all for buildings.
Can you figure out what that number is?
What the current balance is?
Yeah.
I don't know. I could probably, it's probably somewhere in my email. Neil, you seem to be kind of a guru on this stuff. You don't happen to know that number off the top of your head?
Well, at last year's town report, as of June 30th, 2019, there was 117,000.
Oh, okay. Quite a bit then. Well, if it hasn't changed that much since then, and I can't imagine it has, that would suggest the town building reserve is in pretty good shape.
I guess the one thing that comes to mind, Scott, is that you said we're ahead of schedule and that what we're presenting here on this building maybe doesn't need to be done tomorrow, and that we talked about probably maybe the highest priority or a high priority of all this stuff, even maybe perhaps ahead of the generator, was some sort of a ventilation system or possibly a break room. Mm-hmm. Do we have time to get somebody in there to give us a rough idea what that might cost in terms of the Hunter's going to look at the exchange unit part, but do we have somebody that would maybe tell us what it might cost to put an addition on there?
To put an addition, the break room?
Yeah. I mean, do we want to, I thought we'd have to kick that down the road as far as investigation. Now I'm hearing that we're ahead of schedule. Is that,
I think we might, I mean, it's still cutting it close, but we might have a couple of weeks to run that down if we can find somebody.
I know Steve Chamberlain, are you listening in? I see your name there. Maybe that's
Neil.
Oh, that's Neil. Okay.
I'm using Steve's computer.
Okay. So one thing we could do too is we could put a square footage cost on it. You know, rough ballpark a square footage cost for something like that, just as a number, and then say that it, you know, needs to be confirmed. But we could do it that way. We can't get someone to put a real, because to get a really good estimate, you know, we're gonna need a plan or something of it, right? And with materials called out and stuff like that.
Well, right. I don't want to say this with too high a confidence level, but I do recall at one point we had actually talked about converting what is now the office actually into a break room, and then kind of downsizing the office part. I don't know if that's that seemed to make sense at one point in time. It may not make sense now. But that is one of the things we kicked around, was just basically converting the office area into the break room itself.
That room is pretty, that room is probably 10 feet by 10 feet square. Pretty small.
It is, but you also have to remember that I don't know that, I mean, it could happen, but I don't know that they all take breaks at the same time. It's really, I think it'd be pretty unusual. It would be infrequent where all four crew members are taking a break at the same time. It's more for, but I don't know. Well, I don't really know. We should revisit it. But I do recall that's one of the things we were talking about. Yeah. It may not make sense at all. It made sense at one point. It may not make sense now.
Where would you put the office then, with all the books and crap that's in there for keeping track of stuff?
I think there's probably some creative ways to come up with a better office setup. I do, having been down there a bunch of times, I do think that the space that's used for an office is actually pretty spread out. Art had stuff everywhere. I don't know. I haven't been down there since Jimmy took over. I don't know what it's like now, but I think it can be condensed a little bit. The office part of it can be condensed.
Yep.
But again, who knows? I think we should at least put it on the table as a possible way to reconfigure it. What they're doing now is, at least I think they're still doing it, that the area just as you go out into the bays from the office, they kind of, with the gear, they just sort of cordoned off a little area as a little break area, and it's pretty small. That the area that they've got a coffee maker, they've got a couple of chairs, and they've just kind of turned that into a small little break area. Because again, my recollection is when we talked about it, they really just want some place to sit down and be able to eat their lunch comfortably. You know, it doesn't have to be like a big fancy break room.
Yeah, and Jim also said that just a place too where you could have a little privacy too. Make a phone call or something like that.
Right.
Otherwise, sir, everyone's sitting in the room together. And
right. Yeah, there might be some creative ways to use the space that's there. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I can go down and check it out.
All righty.
I think the main thing is, if they show up in the morning at 6:30 and they hang out for 15 to 20 minutes to figure out what the hell they're going to do today. Is it raining? Is it, who's going to do this? Who's going to do that? And then when they get through at work and they get back in there at night, they're probably hanging around for 15 minutes or so before they head home. And then if it's a rainy day, maybe they're in there most of the day, mm-hmm. and they'd want to take a couple of breaks or have lunch. I think the main thing would be a place where it's, the air is clean and they're not breathing the crap that's in the garage.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
So it could be if you funneled that room off and made it separate and somehow maybe just put the, Scott's got a point. Maybe that would work.
I mean, let's not rule it out. Let's kick it around a bit.
Yep.
All right. Well, you know, I think we did what we needed to do tonight, which was mostly just to kick this off and get our bearings. So I think we got that done. We got our assignments. What about from a meeting standpoint? Do you all want to try and get back to a Tuesday schedule next Tuesday?
So you, let's see, did you say we're kind of ahead of schedule? We've got a little time.
Yeah, like not a ton of time, but I think we're ahead of schedule by like a couple of weeks. We've got a little wiggle room here to do some homework.
Yeah, I was just going to suggest maybe if we wanted to not next Tuesday, but the following Tuesday, give us a little more time to research some of this stuff out.
We can do that. We can do that too. I think that's fine. I don't know that we'd have a ton to talk about next week anyway.
Yeah. Because with the vacation, I was just thinking too, like if I, you know, I can contact ARC and see if I can get them to come in and have a look at this, but there's no way they're going to come in this week. I mean, I'll be lucky if I can drag them in there next week. So, you know, I wouldn't have any information on that for, you know, until the week following, probably.
Can we though, even if we don't meet next week, can we try and circulate an updated version, like just do a rough draft of an updated spreadsheet and just get it, you know, start plugging away at it, knowing it needs more work. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'll also try and extrapolate out of the risk assessment some of those other things that might need to go on the list.
Sounds good.
Did John Moore, did you say, I know Becky and Ellen are concerned about the drainage at the town office coming off the carriage shed and running down to the road. And I know there was some talk about doing some more in-depth drainage work there. I stepped away for a moment. Did you guys talk about that a little bit ago?
Yeah. What I basically said, there was a select board meeting and it came up about the drainage or whatever. And I said, and I volunteered, I said, Emily, I'll be happy to call up some gutter people and see what I can do. And I did that, and I didn't get much traction that the gutter was going to work on that old building. So the more I thought about it, the more I thought about a French drain or drainage on the ground. I think I discussed that with Emily, and I don't think she was really thought that would work. So I'm not sure how that problem is going to be solved. I understand there is a problem there, and especially in heavy rains, but heavy rains can do a lot of damage on a lot of roads, no matter how well they're put together. So I don't know what the solution is at this point for the Capitol Committee to do on the drainage issue.
Okay. Just a little bit more context for everybody. Some of you may remember this. John Ricketson, since you're new, you wouldn't remember this, but this was, gosh, I don't know, had to be 3 years ago, maybe even four, when we were actually talking about paving. We were talking about paving that area to solve the drainage issues. Remember that, John?
I clearly do.
So I think, is it safe to say, John, that idea is like never going to happen?
I think the problem with the paving is you can pave it, but then you get clear ice on that, and that can be even more dangerous perhaps than not having it paved. At least when there's gravel there, you can, even though it's covered with ice and stuff, there's humps and bumps can slow you down a little bit. So I guess it could be paved. I know Becky wants it paved, and so who knows, that could happen.
The only reason I'm saying that is I don't think I was about to say, it's not like we're going to get a quote on that in 2 weeks. We can make a note of it or something. I mean, if we don't have a solution, worst case scenario, I think we should just note it on our list, even if we can't put a dollar figure next to it, and make sure we keep it on the radar for something, you know, some solution. And we can put a note in our comments that says, this is an open issue that needs research that we're not really capable of doing, or something, some comment, but just to keep it on the radar. Maybe. I'm just suggesting.
Yeah.
Because the reason I'm suggesting it is because it never seems to go away. It keeps coming up over and over again.
Well, sometimes those squeaky wheels get oiled after a while. So
yeah. Yeah, it's just, what's the right oil?
I guess you could put, if you wanted to do it right, you could put pavement down and put in a heating system into the underneath the pavement to heat it, and then it wouldn't freeze, and you'd be home. You'd have a home run there.
Is that what is typically done, John?
People do that. I think there's a stretch of paved road somewhere over in Bridgewater that some guy wanted it paved in front of his house or some darn thing, and they're fairly wealthy individuals. Heat the pavement so that it doesn't ice up in the winter. That's true. It's possible to do that. I'm not sure what it would cost.
Yeah, that sounds pricey. Yeah,
it's sort of like the town garage. Those floors down there have radiant heat. That's not cheap either.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it'd be the same thing as the radiant heat in the garage, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Seems though there's other priorities than that right now, but maybe that's a priority. I don't know. That's a select board decision, I guess. Not.
Well, yeah, it is. But and again, I don't know that we're going to be able to put dollar figures to it anyway.
It is true that if it's paved, that you can put little paved gutters, if you want to call it that, on the around the corner of that building that would get the water down there. And it certainly, once it hits the pavement, it's not going to wash the pavement out. So it could be an advantage from where it is causing erosion in the gravel that's there now. Mm-hmm. That would not happen if it was paved. It might.
Is it possible just to pave that little spot with that little, I don't know anything, so I'm grasping at straws here, but could you just like pave where it runs off so it runs into a sump or something?
Yeah, you could probably do something similar to what Frank Perrin did over on Webster Hill Road, where he put a stone gutter in there of some sort. But then Becky and those guys park their cars underneath the horse sheds in the winter. So you'd want to be able to get over that gutter into the horse sheds somehow.
I just think I don't know anything, but I had a similar issue at my house and I kind of created basically a trench, and then I dropped a channel where it could drain the other direction, and then it goes into a pipe and then goes down the driveway.
I did that in front of my garage too. Dug a trench, put gravel in it with a perforated pipe, and ran that out. And and it does a really great job. It's amazing. Yeah,
that would be I would sort of err on that as well. Less expensive perhaps than paving the whole thing.
Right.
I'm not sure why didn't the paving get any traction? Do you recall, Scott?
Yeah, because this was when Eric was on the board. I think Emily, actually, as I recall, was the one who brought this up. I think she was the person who brought it up. But there was something about the substrate underneath. If they were going to pave it, there had to be a pretty extensive excavation work to prep it and then build up whatever the right layers were to then finally pave it. But it wasn't as simple as just paving it. There was a lot of
yeah, you have to have the right base.
So my recollection is that base work was so extensive and potentially costly that it just sort of that killed the idea, I think, right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if it's not properly prepared, the asphalt will just heave up and crack, and then you'll have another problem.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's what the concern was.
Yeah.
And then it was later on that I think somebody brought up the point about just the same point you made, John, about if you pave it, you're just asking for a even slippier surface. And then we kind of came back to just leaving it as gravel. But maybe the way to go is just like what we're talking about is trench it, perforated pipe, and then
daylight it or something.
Yeah, then daylight it out to a sump or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, the town could bring in the excavator, dig a trench underneath there, maybe a couple of feet wide, down about 2 feet, put the pipe in, and then fill it up with 1.5 inch rock, and it would probably work.
Yep. That's a pretty cheap solution.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think anything else for tonight? Okie doke.
Thanks, Todd.
That's a wrap.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's touch base via email over the next week and try and come up with a draft version, and we'll plan to meet 2 weeks from tomorrow. Let me just double check the calendar. So 2 weeks from tomorrow is December 8th. Am I right?
Yep.
Okay. Just a heads up. I expect to have internet, no problem, but I will be out of the country starting December 6th. But I should be able to attend the meeting.
Okay.
All righty.
Okay.
Talk to you guys later.
Thanks.
Bye.